Blog Talk Radio.
All right, y'all, welcome in. It is Tuesday night. You know what time it is. Welcome into the V2V podcast. I am your host, Dr. Marcy, America's Voice for the Voiceless. And just in case this is your first time tuning in, I want to ensure you that this is a safe space to bring your whole authentic self. Each week when we get together, we discuss a variety of critical life topics. This week will be no different. You can count on some transparent conversations. Sometimes the conversations can get a little bit uncomfortable depending on the topics. But as always, it's my sincerest wish that what's shared here will inspire you to grow through your discomfort. And our intentions for doing this show as it is each week is that something you hear will touch you to empower you to be able to make some sustainable changes in your own life, your own relationships, and that you can either begin or continue on to your journey from voiceless to victorious. So as always, each week I ask that God use us to have the conversations that you need to hear, and I thank him for the voice, the platform, and the opportunity to become a conduit for healing. The phone lines are open. They will remain open for the duration of the show. So if you have questions or comments for myself or tonight's guest, we'd love for you to call in, and that number is 914-219-0880. And back in January, one of our first episodes, actually when we initially kicked off the Voiceless to Victorious podcast, we touched on the subject of narcissism. And in that episode, we talked a lot about what it is, how to recognize it, ways to address it, things like that. But most of that conversation surrounded the male narcissist. And unfortunately, we ran out of time, even though we do go for a whole hour and a half. It's so much to unpack. So tonight, we invite tonight's narcissism expert, author, and life coach, Ms. Joy Empezzini, is back. She's in the booth and ready to dive back into the subject matter. And if you missed that first conversation, don't worry. Stay tuned tonight, but you can always catch the replay on our website at 9seconds.org/2022 episodes. So it's the number 9seconds.org/2022 episodes. And tonight's guest is, like I said, Joy Empezzini. She's the founder of Pink Girl Teaches. She's a certified life coach whose expertise is in narcissistic abuse recovery coaching. She partners with women and helps them transition through the fear, obligation, and guilt. She calls that the fog, getting through the fog that they experience when in a relationship with the narcissist. And working with Joy offers a unique opportunity to heal, make peace with the past, and maximize the present, and evolve into the highest version of yourself, which I absolutely love. She's the author of Fearless, and the creator of the self-awareness guided journal called Bloom, and the soon-to-be-released book Breathe, which is a guided journal for victims of narcissistic abuse. So, Ms. Joy, welcome back to V2V. You dropped so many nuggets last time that we ran out of time, and tonight I want to really resume that conversation about narcissism, and in particular, unpacking the female narcissist. And then I also, hopefully we'll have time, we need to make time to talk about the babies and how being raised in narcissistic house affects the children. So welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Thank you so much, Dr. Marcy, for having me tonight and for continuing this conversation. It's an honor to be on your platform and to be able to share this with you and just answer any questions and learn with you. and grow with you and your audience. Tonight, I am doing great. I'm actually excited. I've been looking forward to this conversation. This one, actually.
Yeah, it was hard. We literally ran out of time. I think we could have talked for at least another hour or so. So I am so grateful to you that you were gracious enough to agree to come back on again. I don't take people's time lightly, and so I appreciate you choosing. You've had anything that you could be doing tonight, and you chose it to invest with pouring into myself, pouring into our listeners, and we are greatly appreciative of that. And I know that last time you were on, you shared your personal story, but if you just go back a little bit in case there are listeners tonight who kind of missed the first episode, can you share with them, you don't have to go through the whole thing, but share with them your experience and a little bit about your background and some of the things that you've been through as we begin to dive into tonight's conversation.
Sure, and thank you again for this opportunity. So, yes, I'm a survivor of childhood sexual assault. That was my first interaction with a narcissist. Sexual predators are narcissists, sociopaths, or psychopaths, depending on what they do, and, you know, not just in that act, but in other acts, but most likely sociopaths, but that is rooted in narcissism also. But, you know, from that experience in itself, and trying to figure out who am I after all of that was where the narcissists came in. It was like once the door was open to one, the rest could come through. And that was, it was an experience. You know how people say toxic relationship after toxic relationship. And I stayed in these cycles because I didn't know what I was doing. I would go, you know, I would stay, especially when I was married. You know, we would stay together and break up while married, like breaking up while you're married. But it was a cycle because I didn't know what I was dealing with. And when we don't know what we're dealing with, we can often just walk blindly believing that change is around the corner because of, you know, the way that they manipulate and future fake. But there's no change that was ever coming around the corner. I had to realize that any change that I wanted to see had to come from me, and I had to become intentional about that change. And so here we are today, a changed woman.
Amen. And you are so right that the change has to come from within. I think on the last episode that you and I were on, we talked about it. I know that I talked about it last week with our guest and how we have that, I call it the mirror conversation, when we're kind of just sort of at that point where something's out of change, we don't know what, and so we find ourselves somehow standing in invariably in front of a mirror, and the image that we see, we know, like, change is literally the only option. So I completely feel that change has to start with you.
Absolutely. It really has to start with you and, you know, just a mind that's made up. But I think one of the most important things when we decide to make changes in our lives is actually to define our why. Why do I want to change? Why do I want to change? And what will it cost me to change? Because there is a cost and we've got to count the cost. And when our why is not clear, we're very likely to make those same mistakes again.
Yeah, and when you talk about the cost, I tell clients all the time too, you know, when we're talking about, you know, they're debating, you know, I know I need to start coaching, but I'm not sure if I can afford it. I'm not sure if I, you know, can pay this money and, you know, all of that. And so they're focused on sort of that upfront cost, but they're not calculating the price that they've already paid and what it's going to cost them in the future if they don't seek help, they don't pursue change, they don't get the coaching, they don't get the help, they don't buy the book, they don't take the class, they're not going into therapy, whatever the case may be. To your point, change costs, but not changing also costs, and it usually costs a lot more than what we end up paying to begin the healing journey.
Absolutely. That was good when you say, like, it costs either way. You know, it's going
right.
to cost. So, yep. And you got to be intentional
so when you talk
about it and be willing. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, no. I was just going to say, you mentioned being clear about your why. And I always say the same thing, that you have to understand your why from the standpoint that you have to be able to defend your changes. But what makes you, when you say you have to define your why, can you kind of expand on that for the listeners a little bit?
Okay, I'll be glad to. So defining your why is, why do I need to get out of this relationship? We have to take a look at ourselves, at our lives, and the patterns that we are experiencing, and ask ourselves, is this truly how I want to live the rest of my life with? Or, you know, how I want to live the rest of my life, should I say? And if you're in a toxic relationship, right, before we even dive into the big N word, and you keep on seeing the same things repeat, that's an indicator that that is that person's proven behaviors. And so are you going to continue to believe their words? Or are you going to say, you know what, I've assessed the situation here, and I've considered their proven character. Because proven character just doesn't manifest instantly. It's something that develops over time. And so when you say, I'm ready to change, and I'm going to be intentional with why, because I see that history repeats itself with you. And so I can't stay here anymore, because I've made up in my mind that my future is more consequential than my past. I've made peace with my past, and I'm saying, and even if I don't have peace right now, I'll make it as I go along. But I got to get away from this situation, because what you must recognize is that you don't walk around with an extra life in your back pocket. And so do we want to live out our lives not knowing how much time we have waiting for people to change, situations to change, so that they can fit the mold that we want them in? Or are we going to change ourselves, say, oh, okay, Beck, this isn't for me, I'm moving on. I count the cost. Yes, it's going to hurt me. Yes, I'm going to cry, but I'm going to be okay. Some bounce back, you know, I'm going to be okay because I deserve something better. And when you know your why, on the days where it's difficult to be committed to the future that you're walking in, you can always fall back on your why. That's why your why needs to be clearly defined. And sometimes your why is really a boundary for yourself. When we talk about boundaries, a lot of times I feel like the conversation is what you won't allow other people to do, what you won't tolerate, what are your stand. But what about for you? We need boundaries mm-hmm. for ourselves. I'm not going to have no more chocolate cake. Hello. I'm not going to go to sleep on myself. I'm not going to let them talk to me like that anymore. And you don't always have to announce these things, because at the end of the day, the onus on respecting your boundaries is always on you. That's the thing yeah. with them. Nobody really has to. Nobody is obligated to respect any of our boundaries. But we must. Because a boundary is not something that keeps us in a glass box that makes us look cute or whatever, but it's for protection. Your boundaries protect and preserve who you currently are as well as who you're becoming. That's why your why needs to be defined, because there's a version of you that exists that you need to walk into. And it's that version that we want to lay hold of. It's that version that we want to walk into. But in order for that, I got to know my why.
Absolutely. Yeah, and when you're talking about boundaries, too, the one thing about boundaries, somebody's always going to test them. And to your point I about not having to announce them, sometimes I think we feel like, oh, we have to make this loud proclamation, like, oh, I'm putting up a boundary, I'm setting a boundary. But you need to proclaim that within, just like you're saying, like, you have to know that the boundary exists. Nobody else does. Like, how you defend the boundary is going to tell them how serious you are about it. if you're wishy-washy and flaky with it, they're gonna be wishy-washy and flaky. They're not gonna respect the boundary that you don't even honor.
I love how you articulated this. We have to be serious about those boundaries.
Yeah, and people, like you said, people hear the word boundary and they think, oh, you know, it's about what other people do. It's about what you do every single day. Like, I'm trying to lose weight, and that's why I kind of giggled when you mentioned the chocolate cake, because it's like, no, like, if I want what I want, I can't keep doing the same things that I've been doing. I have to put up a boundary there. So that means, no, you can't go to Cheesecake Factory. No, you can't order DoorDash. You know, for me, that's my boundary with that. And it's the same thing in relationships. And, you know, I'm kind of laughing and joking about it because it's a really heavy subject. But we have to approach everything. You know, I use the term that our life is, like, it's our business. We have to run our life like we would run our business. Oh, and so we have to make all of those decisions for what's going to make it successful, what's going to make it profitable, what's going to be beneficial to run this life.
Oh, that is so true. And I laughed with you with the cake because that's the journey that I'm on, you know. And that's why the why has to be defined, because if we don't have that why, then anytime I feel like it, which can be all the time, by the way, I'm going to go to Cheesecake Factory. I'm going to get exactly what I want. And I already can see the menu right now. But, you know, something that you said, it stood out to me. Like, you know, you said you can let people know how serious you are about your boundaries by how you defend your boundaries. And this is something that I stand on that with everything. I don't feel like, and I know that there are instances where I have to articulate my boundaries, right, so people know. But there are some things that are so basic that we should not be announcing them, because I think we should allow people the space to be who they are. So
yes.
That they don't.
Yes.
Manipulate situations and show up with their representative. Let them be who they are. Let them not play the role that they think that they can get away with you. And this is where, you know, with narcissists, it's really true, because in the beginning, they love to ask questions. And narcissists, toxic people for this one, they like to ask questions about what kind of a person are you looking for, so that they can play that role. And it's just a role. When the camera stops rolling, they're back to who they are. When they get what they want, they're back to themselves. It's never about, you know, it's never a true representation of who they are when you've given them the script. They just play. So, no, you come in here, you be yourself, and I'm going to govern myself accordingly.
Right. I always say that I'm going to give you the space to do what you want to do so I can see what you'd rather do. And then I'm going to decide if that works for me or not. And it took a long, 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 long time, a lot of head bumps, a lot of tears, a lot of mistakes, a lot of falling down in order for me to be strong enough and courageous enough to stand on that. And so I don't try to, you know, we were talking about relationships and abusers and things over the past couple shows, and we were talking about, you know, church abuse and stuff like that. But, you know, one of the things is to be able to not only just know what the boundary is, but to be courageous enough to defend it and not feel, and to do it unapologetically. Sometimes we think we have to apologize when we're doing things that's good for us, and we're making a decision, and the only person that decision serves is you, and that's okay. Like, whoever is listening, that's what I want you to understand. Even if the decision you're making only benefits you, that's okay. Like, sometimes we're afraid to make choices that are just for us. But let people, you know, give them the freedom to do what they want to do. Like, I'm not that person in a relationship I used to be, but now I'm not. Wants to track what they're doing, or you know, asking questions about where did you go and who did you see and who did you talk to. You know, I had to learn that people are gonna be who they are if you give them the freedom to let them be that. But when you're trying to rein them in, all you're doing is putting another mask over who they really are. So you're not really ever seeing that authentic individual. And you have to be brave enough to let them show you who they are.
Brave enough. Because it takes courage. It takes courage to stand up for yourself when you haven't done that. You know, I can think of an example, you know, in the Bible, how Peter had to walk on, or decided to walk on water. He never did that before, but that had to be a level of courage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to do when we're coming out of situations, especially like for those people now, you know, for the people, let's just say, who have been raised by narcissists, right? You have to really learn life over, and they have to figure out who they are for themselves, because that's a privilege that they're never afforded. But then how do you begin to shed off that old image or those old thoughts of who you were told that you are, and trust yourself to walk into it, because you've grown up as a people pleaser. Now, people pleasing isn't just bred from narcissistic homes, but it's something that's very common. A lot of people experience people pleasing tendencies. But, you know, it's being brave enough to say, I'm not going to do that anymore, because when I say yes when I mean to say no, I'm mad at me. And now we're all within ourselves. But for what? Why are we doing this? And
right.
I think one of the greatest disservices that we can do to ourselves is allow ourselves to live in our own skin, in our skin, and not be comfortable pleasing somebody that doesn't live within us. Mm-mm.
I like that, pleasing someone who does not live within us. If y'all missed that, that's a tweetable, that, as Oprah used to say back in the day. Oh, that's a tweetable. So Joy, let me back up for a second. You said earlier, you were talking about toxic versus narcissism. So let's break that down for the listeners, and let's talk about what toxic looks like versus what narcissism looks like. And then let's talk about the female narcissist specifically.
Okay. That's such a great question, and I've been thinking for some time how I'm going to answer that question, right? Because when we consider toxic, I think just like narcissism, it exists on a spectrum, and we've got to be able to realize what is the intent of a person when they do what they do. I don't know about that example, but I was going to say, you know, there are so many voices out right now that have podcasts that talk about women. And I'm not going to say they're narcissistic, because I don't believe that, but it's toxic. It tears down instead of builds up, you know. It makes the situation worse instead of edifying it with constructive criticism. It berates. But when we're dealing when you have people who are toxic, we can actually pull them aside and have a conversation, and they can empathize and make a change. Those are the two key points here, to empathize and make a change. One of the key components of being a narcissist or even a sociopath is that there is no empathy whatsoever. There is no empathy. And without that, there's no reason for them to change. With toxic, right, it could just be traits that a person picks up along the way. Traits that they exhibit. But when we talk about narcissists and true narcissists, we're talking about narcissinality disorder. It's a personality disorder. It needs to be diagnosed by a professional. Now, if you know the traits, you're able to discern them, because it's not going to be one or two traits. A lot of people like to have a conversation and say things like, oh, everybody's a narcissist. You're always talking about narcissists. Not everybody is a narcissist. When you're discerning, is somebody a narcissist or not? As in, do they have NPD? We're looking at the number of traits that are showing up in this person, and it's never a brash decision, because labeling somebody, you know, and potentially mislabeling somebody can be very damaging, not mm-hmm. just for that person, but relationships, you know. And so it's always something that nobody really does it lightly. But when you see people talking, and there's always going to be a difference between somebody who is a true victim of this abuse. And, you know, they term the abuse narcissistic abuse syndrome, because there are significant symptoms that victims experience, significant ones. And from somebody who just was in a relationship with a toxic person, those things are completely different. But we're dealing with people who lack empathy. They have that grandiose sense of importance. They're always preoccupied with fantasies. And no matter what, they believe that they're special. Always want to be, you know, admired, lots of admiration. They're entitled, pathologically envious, jealous. They're pathological liars, and their behavior is sadistic, to say the very least. Those are the traits of narcissistic personality disorder. And when you're able to see multiple, the DSM says up to five of those, but, you know, up to five, and sometimes it is more, that show up in a person, then you're dealing with somebody who has narcissistic personality disorder. And at the key of that, you will always find that if you have four of those traits, the fifth one is going to be the lack of empathy. Then you know you have a problem on your hands.
Yeah, it's always, you know, even on the last show when you were giving the signs and things to look out for, you know, I was in a relationship with an undiagnosed narcissist, a narcissist in denial. But it was interesting, because as you were reading off the characteristics, like, I could see every single one of them exhibited in that individual. And, you know, for me, you know, I was molested when I was 12. I've had major self-esteem issues. I was almost 400 pounds at one point. I've been physically abused in a relationship. And through all of the things that I've been through, I think the thing that destroyed me the most and that was so hard to come back from was the 3 years that I spent with a narcissist. Like, I left that relationship completely barren. I was empty. I was lost. I was sad. I was desperate. And I was all of those things, but I didn't recognize any of those things in myself, if that makes sense. Like,
oh yeah,
I didn't understand. Yeah, it was like, once I started healing, then I was able to see how far down the hole I was after that relationship. And then I was able to see at the depth of where I was at the end of my relationship with the narcissist, I could then see why the charisma of my physical abuser was so appealing. It was like he filled in all of the blanks that the narcissist that I had allowed them to take from me, or that I had voluntarily given up. And some things he didn't take from me, some things I never had to begin with. Like, I was struggling with self-esteem issues anyway. So he didn't take my self-esteem, but the little tiny shreds that were left, he made sure that I had no access to them emotionally and mentally. Like, I couldn't see them. And so that gave me, you know, I was wide open then for the next abuser. So when you were talking earlier about the cycles and how we pick one toxic, abusive, narcissistic, whatever our thing is, we pick them over and over and over again because I call it the chaos that I know versus the chaos I don't. Like, I know how to deal with some of these things, so I'm just going to stick with that. Like, it sucks, but I know how to deal with it. I know I won't die.
Ooh, and that's the thing. That's the thing, you know, the chaos that I know versus the chaos that I don't know. Another way that, the way I used to say it, right, is I'd rather deal with the devil that I know than the condemnation that will be out there afterwards. When people mm-hmm. start to ask, mm-hmm. well, why would you stay with somebody like that? It couldn't be me. I would never do it. And it's crazy because, you know, people who are abusive, because narcissists are abusive, emotional abuse is real abuse. The scars may not be physical, they may not be evident, but they are there and they run deep. And it's not that the abuse just starts off on day one. It doesn't. But it's very subtle, you know. They work it in real smoothly after building you up and placing you on a pedestal, and they knock you down. And sometimes, you know, they chip at the foundation of that pedestal slowly until, you know, the structure falls on its own, which is really when the illusion is over, because that relationship, anytime you have a narcissist, I don't care if it's your parent, everything is an illusion, nothing is real. The horror you may experience, yes, that is real, but what they tell you is all an illusion. And that's mm-hmm. why the comeback from these relationships is so difficult. It's so difficult. You mentioned how you have experienced various things in life, but nothing knocked you like the relationship with a narcissist. And if I had a penny for every time I heard that, listen, I'll be ready to retire, because that is the common theme with everybody who has been with a narcissist. I mean, the experiences are almost identical. There are variations, but when people come out of these relationships, one of the things is like, I've never experienced this type of pain before. And then people look at you mm-hmm. like, girl, bye, you broke up with somebody. You even got divorced. You've dealt with it. No, you don't understand this pain. And it's something that is not easy to articulate. And I don't like thinking about it, but it's having a membership in a club that, you know, they understand you, but we really don't want this membership, but we get each mm-hmm. other and we understand. And it's like, if you don't have this membership, well, you're not going to get it.
Yeah. They especially don't understand the pain if you were the one that ended the relationship. So it's just like, well, you wanted to break up. So why are you crying about it? Why are you upset about it? You know? And so then, you know, I love what you said about dealing with the devil that I know versus the condemnation that's out there afterwards. Like, that's what keeps people in abusive relationships all the time, is the condemnation and the judgment. And so it's no different with a narcissist. So let's talk a little bit about the female narcissist, because I think a lot of times, and maybe it's just because I mainly work with women and I mainly speak with women, but some of my guy friends, you know, I've been able to recognize, you know, things in their significant others or partners or girlfriends or whatever. And you're like, bro, she's destroying you. And, you know, I think for guys, it can be hard when they're in a relationship with a female narcissist, because there's this persona and there's this, you know, this macho sort of expectation that guys should just be able to handle it. And let's talk about what the female narcissist looks like and just how diabolical she is.
Diabolical is the word. Thank you for using it. Mm-hmm. Diabolical is the word. Now, when we talk about a female narcissist, the truth is that the difference between a female narcissist and a male narcissist is their physical setup. What the men do, the women do it their way. And it's really just because it is a personality disorder, right? So they all operate and they act the same way. The only thing when it comes to a female is that she can put on some MAC. She can slap on that lipstick. She can present herself in a way where she is the damsel in distress. She's the good mother because she knows how to manipulate people. You see, you don't become a narcissist overnight. It's been something that they've been walking into and perfecting. You see, every time something goes wrong, mentally they go in the boardroom and they readjust, they make changes. Oh, okay, so this relationship didn't work out because of this, so next time I got to act like this and like that so that I don't have that negative experience. So they go and they make adjustments as necessary and come back stronger and able to do more damage and more harm. So with the female narcissist, she just plays her roles, you know. And the female narcissist, for one reason why I think she is a special kind of evil, is because these women go up and have children. And if we say that this woman has no empathy, she has no empathy. There's not a, you know how there's we can bond with our babies and there's oxytocin that is released. Yes, it's not happening with her. For whatever reason, it's a source of narcissistic supply, period. So while she may be the doting mother in the hospital while everybody is visiting and seeing her interact with this baby and congratulating her, the baby is nothing more than a prop. The baby is going to be used to be like, oh, my gosh, you just had a baby, and look at you. And now you're complimenting the baby. Oh, the baby is so beautiful. The baby is so adorable. Look at the baby. That makes them upset because the attention has to be on them. So while people may not know, they're actually setting this child up for payback. Because anytime a narcissist, because if the attention is not on her, and it's on this baby, that's essentially a narcissistic injury. That's a blow to her ego. And now, whenever there's a blow to the ego, there has to be rage that follows, the narcissistic rage. But the rage is usually felt by the person who issued the injury or the object, the tool that they like to call it, because these self-aware narcissists that are, you know, talking about what they do and everything, they refer to victims as tools. They'll say, you're nothing more than a toaster to me. I'm going to use you for what I need. And so the toaster malfunctioned here. The baby malfunctioned here because it stole all the attention. This is how they think. And so that baby has to pay a price. And you see, that baby may be paying a price for decades for that one thing that they had nothing to do with.
Mm-hmm.
And so we look at these women and we think, or we just look at women in general, and we think that mother nature, or you know, the mothering is going to just kick in. No, it's not. It's not going to kick in at any point. And so to the gentlemen that are listening, this is why it's so crucial that we think with our real heads and we're not captivated by the 36, 26, 36, because some of them mm-hmm. are obsessed with how they look. But when you meet these women, when you meet women, you got to start asking, can she really be a mother to my child? And you got to allow time to expose the bonds or weak bonds, because she plays the part, she plays the role for as long as she needs to, until she knows that she has you wrapped around her little finger. And then the show is over. The mask slips and she can be who she is because she has you right where she wants you. And for those that are saying, oh, well, I can just walk away. No, you can't. Because there are even repercussions for you walking away. At that point, she has infiltrated your inner circle, your finances, your mind, your emotions, and your will, which is the soul of a person. This is why it's difficult and it's painful to leave these relationships, because of the way the abuse works from your mind to your emotions, influencing your will, which is the soul of a person. And that's why so many people get stuck in these cycles, because the very core of who they are, it's like an emotional rape. There's no other way to say it. And for when we think about, you know, these gentlemen that are in these relationships and they've been taught and been, you know, it's been drilled in them since young age that, listen, you're a man, you can't cry. You got to man up. You know, it's just toxic behavior. No, it's not toxic behavior. This is behavior that can arrest your destiny, your purpose, and strips you of everything. Because what she lives to do to every male that she interacts, including her own son, is emasculate them. And that's not love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've seen different conversations about, you know, when women say, like, they're talking about their son and they're like, he's the man of the house. That's mommy's little man. That's the only man in my life. Things like that. And not to say that when everybody says that, that's wrong, but it seems to me like from how you're describing it, almost like there's sort of a fine line there.
Oh, listen, first I think it's wrong because if this child, let's say he's 9, is the man of the house, when did he get to experience childhood? Because we're telling him he's the man of the house. When mm-hmm. When is he allowed to just go through the motions that other little boys do? Why is this weight and this responsibility put on him, and why is he the only man in your life? Where are the other men? And, okay, maybe you don't have a father. Maybe you don't have a brother. But there has to be a cousin somewhere. Where are the good male mm-hmm. friends? Where are the good role models in your life? Where are the male leaders in your life? And when we find that we don't have these, then we need to ask ourselves some questions. Were we conditioned to believe that we don't need them? And if so, why? And how has your life been impacted without positive male role models? Because the truth is, there's no such thing as I don't need a man. There's no such thing as that. We need them. Mm-hmm. And so when a narcissistic mother, because they love to say that, and I'm not saying that all women who say that, some just say it because they've heard it and they think it sounds cute.
Right.
It's not cute. But anyhow, narcissistic mothers breathe this thing. You know, if we have, like, for example, a mother that has a son and a daughter, 9 times out of 10, that son is going to be what we will call the golden child. That is the one she loves. Well, okay, let me pull back a bit, because narcissists, they never love. But that is the one she's going to give the illusion of love, because it's the golden child. And just because that's the golden child, please don't ever think that she has good intentions for this person. No, because the person at this any narcissist in this female narcissist world is herself. So that child is just who she's going to be nice with, because she needs to build a harem. She needs to build a narcissistic cult, a love cult, people who are going to be on her side, the flying monkeys. So that's all that golden child is. Another puppet on a string in her life. But if she has a daughter, that daughter in that relationship is going to be the scapegoat, the black sheep of that family. That is where all the rage will be issued. She gets all the projection, all the vile treatment. Now with that son, she can say, and it's, you know, it's pretty common, that she will say things like, you know what, you're the only man. She can have a husband in the home and triangulate the husband with the son. What am I saying? That she will mm-hmm. use the son against the father. She will say, you know what, you'll never be like your father. You're so special. There's no man like you. You know, you're the only man in my life that I love. Meanwhile, she's talking to a 5-year-old in front of a grown man. They mm-hmm. take it a step further. Listen, these people know no boundaries. That's why I said it before, and I got to say it again. Gentlemen, please do not be impressed by what they look like. Allow her to show you her patterns and believe what she is showing you, because you should not breed with this type of woman. You cannot have children with her. Parental alienation. Ha ha. She's going to use that kid for 18 years and beyond against you. And so you also have to consider that there is such a thing as emotional incest, and they are notorious with this in their sons. And it starts at a young age where the son is the one she leans in on for, you know, that emotional support that we would get from our spouses, from grown men. But she's asking a young boy for this, one who doesn't even know anything. They introduce their sons or walk around in seductive lingerie in front of them, naked sometimes, just to show her, does mommy look good? What does that have to do with him? Like, listen, this is not me making things up, but like this, the stories that I've heard from men who are hurting because of what they went through, and they didn't know what it was, but now when they're figuring out and the pieces are connecting, my mother is a narcissist, the devastation, and now, you know, when they know that, okay, it's okay for me to talk about what I went through. Some of these stories, like, I have no words for them.
Yeah. So what is the common... So if a guy, if you're talking to a male client or someone who's deciding if they need help with some narcissism recovery work, what are some of the common things that they have experienced but they're uncomfortable talking about? Because that's, you know me, I like to get to the dirty underbelly of the subjects and the stuff that people don't want to talk about. Like, what are they going through? What are they experiencing? Because I know for a fact that there's people out there who are experiencing these things, and they don't know that it's narcissism. They know that it's wrong or that it doesn't feel good, but they don't know how to even begin to ask for help or that there even could be help available. Like we've talked about in the past, like, people don't know to ask for help. If that's all they know, if that level of crazy and growing up in a narcissistic environment is all they don't know another option exists. So what do you hear from the men?
From the men, the number one is always how emasculated they are. And it's not even, you know, I think it's the way they say it. And, you know, just the way they are able to express themselves and the deep sorrow that it comes with. That's why, you know, I think it's, I always say just allow, you know, those feelings of excitement when you meet somebody new to dry out. So you can be in your right mind when you're assessing them for a relationship. You know, there's the deceit in marriage. Knowing that your spouse was never faithful, finding out that she's been taking care of herself. And when I say taking care of herself, what I mean is that she knows she's carrying STDs that may be treatable, and she gets treated but never lets him know. So they're finding prescriptions for things they, you know, they think we're in a monogamous relationship here, finding out that this woman is still married and you're planning a wedding with her.
Yeah, my narcissist ran that game on me. Yeah. It hurts.
It really hurts
a lot.
I know one story where they lived in the United States, but she was married in another country and using him to support the other husband.
Oh, wow.
Mhm. That's not.
That's,
I mean,
a different.
That's
a different level of evil.
Yeah, it is. But you know, I think when we're dealing with a female narcissist, one thing that may make them different from men, right, is that when they're a narcissist, there are different categories of them. You could have the overt narcissist, which is, so it's pretty easy to spot when you know what you're looking for. you know, they're loud, they're aggressive, they're brash, they don't care. They're just who they are. You know, of course, like all predators, they assess who their target is, and they play the role that they have to play. But it's not hard to know that this is there's something wrong with this person. The trouble is when you come in contact with a covert narcissist. So when you consider overt, right? Overt, extreme, you know, over the top. But covert, think of them in the closet. And that's just to help you to differentiate between the two. There's also another class, which is the malignant narcissist, and those are closer to your sociopaths, right? But when we have the covert, and I want to talk about this a little bit because this is where a lot of females fall into this category. And there are plenty of males like this too. So, again, you know, there are malignant female narcissists. There are overt female narcissists. But I believe that there is an overwhelming number of covert. And before we even talk about how she behaves, you know, people will think that, because, you know, if you do a Google search, it's going to tell you that only 1% of the world's population is diagnosed with narcissist or is potentially a narcissist. But if you read the study a little bit more, it tells you that those are only the figures based on a relatively small number of people. Because for one thing, no narcissist believes that there's anything wrong with them, or the majority of them. It's the overwhelming majority. They don't see anything wrong with them, and they believe that everyone else is the problem, so we all need to change and accommodate them. That's why they're not going to go to get tested. That's why there will never be a more accurate research number or even the percentage. It's grossly undercalculated. But when we look at the covert female narcissist, they're really hard to discern. Now, if somebody's listening and they're hearing me talk about a female, you can always interchange that with male because they're just that interchangeable. But when they're mm-hmm. covert, they will fly under the radar a lot longer. And they just think of her more sneaky. You know, so you might see some passive aggressive behavior, some, you know, dismissing you in, you know, what can be perceived as normal ways, but that's just one of those red flags you need to be mindful of. Now, it's not to say that if people are doing those things that they're a narcissist, right? Because we're looking at all traits, not just one, but all the traits. But you'll find, you know, that you end up having to spend a ridiculous amount of time reassuring them, stroking their ego, lifting them up. They're fragile emotionally, hypersensitive, and easily wounded. That's the one thing about a narcissist. They can dish it out, but they can never take it. They can never take it. They'll always be the victim about something, don't handle stress very well, does not have, you know, a wide circle of friends. Mood swings, depression, anxiety, always manipulating to get what they want. And even if she's not, you know, even if the only thing you recognize about this person is that they're manipulating you, that's also like a red flag. And at some point, we got to look at these red flags as deal breakers.
Right. Well, I think even with this list, I think the thing that you said very early in the conversation, going back to that, is the lack of empathy. Like, you can have some of these things, but then when you pair passive-aggressive behavior, being very dismissive, with also not having any empathy, like, you just don't, literally, you just don't give a damn. Like, that is the piece, I think, that if you peel back some of this stuff, and, you know, whether we're talking toxic or we're talking, you know, obviously narcissism and NPD are more extreme, but with any of this stuff with abusers, quite often they do lack empathy. Like, it's always about them. And so I think when we're talking about the red flags, you know, and that's one of the things I talk about in my teen program with relationship red flags and teen dating, is can the person care about other people? Do they literally care? Do they feel anybody else's pain? Do they experience anybody else's sadness? Can they even comprehend that somebody's sad or that they did something that hurt somebody's feelings?
And this is why they're sadistic, right? Because they know. They know what it's like to feel pain. They know what it's like to mm-hmm. feel shame. They know what it's like to feel hurt. They know those things. But they would purposely set out to make you feel those things. You know, there may be an instant where you're happy. You're having a great day. Everything is fantastic. And because they don't like that you are having a good day, they've got to project what they're feeling onto you to dull your day down. And that is something that is very common with narcissists. Like, they don't want to see other people happy. So they ruin birthdays. They ruin holidays. They ruin mm-hmm. Valentine's Day. They ruin graduations, any special occasion. Mm-hmm. And the crazy thing is, like, you know, we can think of occasions where we're celebrating joyous moments, but it could be a funeral of a parent. They're going to find a way to ruin it.
Because the attention's not on them. It's on whoever is being mourned or whoever is being celebrated.
Exactly. So now if you're her spouse, if you're her man, and it's the loss of somebody in your family, well, she's going to be upset at you because you shouldn't be crying. I'm right next to you. Don't you see? Have you forgotten that you owe me all the praise? That's how it is. That, you know, men don't feel supported in those moments. They don't feel heard in those moments. And she sets competition up. So, you know, another common thing that I'll hear is how I was always compared to her other boyfriends, always compared to her exes, mm-hmm. always compared to her guy friends. And she never has any female friends. And if she does, it's obvious she's in competition with them. But, okay, one story that just came across my mind is how he may think, you know, okay, she'll pull him in for intimacy, right? She initiates intimacy. So he's like, man, mm-hmm. it's going down. And right when it's time to get to it, she whips out a ridiculous-sized toy and is like, you could never do this. Stuff like that.
Oh.
And that's
I could see where that would, you know, that falls right into that emasculation and making somebody feel less than. And, you know, I don't know. So I was thinking as you were talking about the covertness of female narcissists, and I think we recognize male narcissists so much because they tend to be more overt. But I think that, and tell me if I'm wrong or tell if I'm off base here, but is it because they are celebrated for that? Like, they're applauded for being abrasive and being aggressive. Like, you know, their buddies are buying them beers when they, you know, quote, check their woman or, you know, that's the guy. He's in charge. He's the boss. That's the man when he's behaving badly.
Yep, because they don't have anybody
like,
that's strong enough.
Yeah, so for them, it's like it's celebrated and encouraged. So, like, let me be more of this in public. And very seldom, even if they're, what I've seen, even with domestic violence, very seldom, even if the friends recognize the bad behavior and know that it's inappropriate, very few times will they intervene or say anything about it. And so it kind of becomes this free-for-all to continue to mistreat your partner. And with women, though, if they're acting very overt and bold and loud and aggressive, they're condemned for that. And so I think that's what drives the female narcissist more underground, maybe. I don't know. Am I right? Am I wrong?
I wish I had a clear answer for you on this. You know, with the narcissist, like, they're very selective about who they allow into their harem. And that's going to be the people that prop them up. So when you're talking about the, you know, the overt male and his hype people, right? They've been selected for that.
Okay.
So oftentimes you'll find that they're either going to be just another narcissist themselves, or they have been groomed for that moment. So is there a codependency there also? And sometimes, you know, the narcissist will have them in a situation, well, because remember, I did A, B, C, D for you, so you need to just be quiet and roll out with me. Now, I for one, and I'm going to say this, like, I know that there are all these different, categories of narcissists, right? But they're all interchangeable, and that's really the thing. So I tend not to get too caught up on, you know, what they are, because the one I was married to was covert. It took me forever to figure it out. And it wasn't until there was now physical violence involved. And then it was, we're able to see, because that's when they become malignant. They're more on par to be a sociopath based on, you know, certain other things. And just how depraved their mind is. Because it's one thing to say that there is no empathy, but it's another to really understand that they enjoy what they're doing. Some of them plan these moves. We see it a lot. And if we can just take the entertainment and the sports industry for a moment, we see these athletes. And how many times, I mean, there's more than one story. I've heard it more than once where, you know, they did their business. And he was like, but I wore protection. And she turkey basted herself. That's not
me. Right.
But behaviors like that are common with these type of women. And so while, you know, we have some women that are just out there, even when it comes to narcissists and attention, let's say it like this, negative attention, positive attention, it doesn't mean anything to them as long as it's attention. So she could be told, stop it, or, you know, get all kinds of negative attention. That feeds the ego. And so some will do things purposely knowing that if I post this, if I show up at his job like this, if I say this, I'm going to set some people off and I'm going to feel good about it. And so they go ahead and they do it anyway.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that they're chosen. People are selected for the roles. Like the narcissist is choosing specific people and specific characteristics that will aid them in kind of executing their plan. So they kind of know going in, like you said, they know what to look for. They know what to ask for. They know how to identify somebody that they can manipulate.
Absolutely. And we can never underestimate the patience of a narcissist. So if they have to take time to figure out who are you and, you know, how can I significantly pull the supply that I need from you, I'll take my time to study you. They are very, very patient.
Yeah, I think that word, the more we talk about it, I'm like, yeah, diabolical is definitely... That's definitely the word. That is definitely the word. I think that as I'm just listening to you describe this, and like I have all these visions and visuals and memories kind of, you know, coming up as I'm thinking about like my past relationship with a narcissist. And one of the reasons why I was so enthusiastic about having you on the show was because for me, when I was in that 3-year relationship,
I never knew what a narcissist was. You know, it's kind of like domestic violence back in the day. It didn't have a name for it. It was called keeping your woman in check, you know, and so it was just when I got out of the relationship and I went into support and recovery for the domestic violence, that's when I learned about narcissism. And so, you know, that's why I just feel really passionately, and I'm so appreciative of you for coming on and for sharing this information, because I think sometimes, you know, it's one thing to fight a demon, but if you don't know the demon that you're fighting, you don't know what you're up against, you're going to come into the battle with the wrong tools. And I think in order for people to heal, in order for people to find happiness, they have to have the tools that they need to fight the battle that they're in. And this information is so, so, so important in order for people to do that.
You said one word, that word is the key. I don't know if you've ever watched the show on the ID channel. That's Diabolical.
I don't think I have.
It just shows you the level that they will go to, and everybody on there, they may not be a killer, but they definitely a narcissist. Some are psychopaths, mm-hmm. some are sociopaths. But when we're able to see how people get caught up in these relationships, we're able to, you know, get a level of self-awareness. Or not even self-awareness, but just, you know, to be more mindful that when something doesn't feel right, because sometimes we're looking for red flags like, you know, their aggression and stuff like that, but sometimes the red flag is more subtle. It's you not feeling mm-hmm. comfortable. It's that little voice on the inside of you that tells you something isn't right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we talked before about walking on eggshells and how, like, it can be just that simple. Like, you just intuitively, like, instinctively, you just feel like something's wrong. But then, you know, we're conditioned that we have to be able to label everything. And you know, whether we're talking about boundaries or we're talking about, you know, being able to identify a narcissist or a toxic person or an abuser or whatever, don't worry about labeling it right then. You know, I feel like if we stop trying to put a label on everything, then we stop trying to fix everything and just be honest and say, you know, my gut is telling me that this is crap and it's not working. Not working for me. I don't feel good in this instant. I don't feel good in this relationship. I don't feel good in this situation. And remove ourselves from the relationship, from the circumstance, from the behaviors. Take ourselves out of the equation just because it doesn't feel good or just because it doesn't feel right. We don't have to know why. And I think sometimes we waste too much time trying to figure out, oh, what's wrong with her? What's wrong with him? Or, you know, maybe I should do this, or maybe I should. No, if it doesn't feel good, maybe you should just walk away. Maybe you should just create an exit strategy. Maybe you need an exit plan. You know, you can't always walk away right in the moment, but not having to understand why it's bad, just know that it doesn't feel good. And you deserve to feel good. You deserve to be happy. You deserve to feel safe. If you're walking on the eggshells, you don't feel safe, you don't feel good, you don't feel happy, you're crying all the time, you know, you're whatever. If it's not sitting well, if it's not seated deep well within your soul, it's okay to leave without putting a label on it.
That's
I think that might have been
important.
My soapbox moment.
And those are the moments, you know. Those are the moments, because I think when we tap into that vein, that's the information and the advice somebody needs.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes we just, yeah. We hold on. We hold on because I can't figure this thing out. Sometimes we really don't have to figure anything out. when your whole body is speaking to you. And it's important, like, listen, narcissistic abuse has physical symptoms, right? Remember, it's narcissistic abuse syndrome that victims experience. So PTSD, CPTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder, insomnia, autoimmune disease, hair loss, migraines. Like, that's just a small portion of some of the things that you go through. But now, if we think about children, right? If we think about children that grew up in these households, and they have to walk on eggshells their entire lives. So let's say up until age 18, right? So from birth until 18, this child is never validated, right? And we need to validate our children so that they know that they can trust themselves, so that they know that they are capable of making wise decisions. They are not validated. They are not prepared for life. Listen, they're not prepared for life. They don't get any life lessons. Sometimes us adults, we do the most when we see somebody who doesn't know the things that we think are basic and they need to know. And we say things like, well, what's wrong with you? Like, well, what kind of home did you grow up in? Like, I knew how to do this when I was that, you know, and we name an age. But we don't know what their background was. We don't know.
Right.
And sometimes when we don't know, less is more. They're not validated. They're not prepared for life. And now they're an adult that doesn't trust themselves, that is going to be a people pleaser and just gets along to get along. And one thing about a narcissist is they don't give up any source of supply. They don't want to let go of what they feel belongs to them. That's why now I'm going to switch for a little bit and tell you about
narcissistic mother.
When she is with her son, he is her object of affection. I use the golden child.
So now, when he is into relationship,
nobody is ever good enough.
No matter what a fantastic partner she would be for him.
She's not the mother.
She's not toxic. She's trying to take my supply away from me. She can't stay here.
And so these mothers sit there
and start to manipulate the relationship. Lord, you said a mouthful there. Okay, so we've got about 15 minutes left, and I definitely want to come back and let's talk about that. But I want to play, take a quick music break, grab myself some water, because we've just been going at it. So let me give everybody a chance to breathe for a second, and then we will be right back, and we're going to pick up with that conversation about what the relationships look like when children have grown up in an abusive, narcissistic, abusive household.
Death row party.
All right, guys, we're back from break. This is the B2B Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Marcy, and that song was called Ironic by Alanis Morissette. And we have been talking tonight with narcissism expert, author, and life coach, Ms. Joy Impazzini from Pink Girls Teaches, and we've been discussing the female narcissist. And before we went on break, Joy, you were talking about how the impact of narcissism on the kids, but specifically you started talking about what it's like when you become in a relationship with someone who was raised by a narcissistic mother. So I'm going to turn the mic back over to you, my dear, and let you finish dropping those nuggets for us.
You know, I don't think that you can really have a relationship with somebody. And this is what I just said. This is only the ghost on the inside. That has to be accountable to that woman. One thing as parents, we allow our children, as they grow, is to have boundaries. To have a voice of their own. We create environments that feel safe. To just express themselves, this is something that they've been denied. So it doesn't really matter how old you are as a woman for this man. That woman is in the background, the mother. And that is the person that you've got to handle, it's never him. Because for one, he may not even realize that he's been.
I know with men, we talk about women emasculating men, but this one doesn't get a chance to be a man. He doesn't get a chance to be a boy and express himself.
He doesn't get to actually have the opportunity to walk into boyhood or walk through boyhood into manhood because everything must be dictated for him by her.
So, like, when you're talking about that, so what I'm envisioning then is, you know, like we talk about some of the training that I do is life skills, right? And so because the mother has been completely in control of everything, if I'm understanding you correctly, he's growing up and he doesn't have the basic life skills to manage a healthy relationship. Like he's never had a voice. He's never been able to be autonomous because the mother dictates everything. So how does that exhibit in the relationship with him and the new significant other, the new partner, with the mother aside for a second? Like, what does it look like with him and the partner?
You know, it can take place in various ways. Sometimes she'll find that the mother has to be included in every decision that needs to be made. She can't make a decision on his own. He may be one who procrastinates a lot. And, you know, we'll see the traits of a codependent because that he can be groomed for that. You know, when a child is raised by a narcissist, they're either going to become a narcissist themselves or they're going to be codependent. So she will either have a toxic man, either way, because even codependency has its toxic traits. And, you know, people-pleasing, that's not a beneficial thing in a relationship. So,
mm-hmm.
It's like, to some degree, he may be the man in the relationship, but she's the one who wears the pants in the relationship, and she's not even there.
So then it almost forces the new partner, girlfriend, wife, whatever, to almost step in to some degree almost into the same behaviors, because if he won't make a decision, it's almost like a trap. Like,
it is a trap.
There's no winning, because you're forcing your partner to behave maybe in ways they might want to be more submissive. They might want to let you lead, but you're not equipped to lead. So now they've got to take on additional roles, and then you've still got the mother in the background barking and complicating everything. So it almost feels like it's sort of a no-win for this son that's grown up with a narcissistic mother. What about daughters?
Oh, daughters, now that can be the complete opposite. The mother, not complete opposite in that she doesn't care about the son, she does not care about the daughter. When puberty hits that girl and her body begins to shape out and she's got youth on her side, the mother's thinking, man, I remember my day when I could use what I have to get what I want. So there's a hate for the daughter. The daughter, you know, the father, the girl's father may love his daughter and want a, you know, a daddy-daughter relationship, but is denied that because why should she get the attention that I need from you? These women, she sleeps with her daughter's boyfriend. She sleeps with her daughter's husband. She becomes friends with her daughter's friends. She also sleeps with her son's friends. There's just no limit to what they do. These women, you know, in some instances, right? So the point is to break this person down. And that goes for son or daughter. But the point is, like with her daughter, that daughter, just like the son, is not prepared for life. But you'll find in instances, these are some of the mothers that keep their mouths shut, knowing that they're bringing men into the home to use their daughters or to, you know, to have their way with their daughters.
Wow.
They know what's going on. They know that the pastor is not good, you know, the pastor is shady in his ways. They know what he's doing, but they don't care because their need is being met. And I think one of the most, and I think when it comes to a female narcissist, and the one that really gets under my skin the most, is the one that goes and fosters children and adopts children. Because her goal in seeking those children is always, what am I going to get out of the deal? It's never to open up her home for these children, but she's going to these, you know, she's going to these places saying, I want to take care of this child. And so to the church community, to her work community, to her home community, she's viewed as a hero. She's getting that praise, adoration, admiration, the adulation, right? But at home, what she's doing to this child. Yeah, the baby can look perfect, hair all done, socks beautiful, clothes matching and everything, just looking the part. That's because that's what needs to be shown to the outside. Because remember, she's now the one who has they all have a God complex, but this one wants to be praised for this. But when that baby gets home, no bed in the house, no food in the house, beaten, not treated properly, but she selected this child for that.
Wow. Well, yeah, and how they look in public is representative of how much attention will be placed back on the mother. Because if you're doting on my child, like, oh my gosh, your baby's so cute, it's like giving them praise, even though they're talking about the child. But the attention still is focused on them. What a great mother you are, and what a great, you know, how sweet you are for doing this, and oh my gosh. But then to your point, then what is the child experience behind closed doors? Because we all know, like, once there's nobody watching, the narcissist is extremely damaging, extremely, you know, withholding affection and things like that. It's, I can't imagine as a child, like, it makes me sad.
It's really devastating when you hear their stories. I mean, there are no words for it.
Yeah. All right, guys, we have about 3 minutes left. So, Ms. Joy, will you share with the listeners how they can get in touch with you, where they can find your books, and, you know, where's the best place to connect with you?
Well, first, I want to say thank you for the opportunity, Dr. Marcy. It's always a privilege to be able to share, to educate people so that they know how to protect themselves, what to look out for. And so I want to thank you so much for allowing me this opportunity. I am easy to find. Just www.pinkgirlteaches.com. And any social media platform is always Pink Girl Teaches.
That is simple. Very simple. And I feel like, again, we've just barely, like, there's so much to unpack when it comes to narcissism that I feel like this hour, like, an hour and a half is already gone, and I don't even know where, like, we were an hour in before I even looked up to look at the timer for the episode. So once again, ma'am, you definitely, you over-deliver every single time. You're a wealth of knowledge. You're a fantastic resource. You're an amazing woman. And I thoroughly, thoroughly appreciate you investing the time to come back on again, to share information with all of us. And again, guys, if you need to connect with Ms. Joy, you can go to pinkgirlteaches.com or on all of her social platforms. And I believe you're pretty much on everything, right?
I'm mostly on YouTube and TikTok, but I do make appearances on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay. So there you got it, guys. YouTube and TikTok is the best place to go. Just look for Pink Girl Teaches. Also, if you're a member of the Voiceless to Victorious Facebook group, links to her media will be posted along with tonight's replay if you missed any of tonight's episode. So in the meantime and in between time, guys, this is Dr. Marcy, America's Voice for the Voiceless. We are signing off tonight, wishing you all health, safety, and success until we link up again here next week on the V2V podcast. So that's it for us, y'all. Everybody have a great night. Joy, thank you so much.
Thank you.